with this study of this wonderful book, The Cloud of Unknowing. This we studied during last summer also, and since we finished only about a tenth of the book last summer, we decided to continue with it this summer too. And the book is, as it mentions, it is the book of contemplation. Here beginneth a book of contemplation which is called The Cloud of Unknowing. And the goal of this book is very clearly stated, that in the which, and the English language is a bit archaic, a good deal archaic, in the which a soul is one with God. So it is the soul that we feel as separate due to ignorance. As the knowledge dawns, we see that it is really God. It is the separateness was felt due to ignorance, and that was the cause of all sufferings. And the moment, actually, again, that is poverty of language. There is no sense of time really there. We cannot say moment either, but just figuratively try to feel that when the ignorance vanishes, then we see the truth, and then that is the goal of life. So let us begin with the prayer which is in the beginning of the book. God, unto whom all hearts be open, and unto whom all will speaketh, and unto whom no privy thing is hid, I beseech thee so far to cleanse the intent of mine heart with the unspeakable gift of thy grace, that I may perfectly love thee and worthily praise thee. Amen. There was a discussion in the last class where we stopped last Tuesday about the meekness in New Testament, and the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus mentions meekness, the great virtue because of which or by which you get that blessedness, the part of the divine. So that aspect of divine, you feel blessed through this meekness as you practice meekness. But this meekness is of two types: an imperfect meekness, which is important, but then there is a perfect meekness. And the author here has described the two types, that it is imperfect meekness lies in true knowledge of what is felt as I. We make really too much of it. I am so big, I am so learned, I have so many degrees, and all that, you know. It is, I can do this and that and that. So it is, this is to be overcome. Meekness in that sense means looking at the bondage that we are in, looking at how this life is slavish, running behind or running after, let's say, various objects of sense pleasures, and they seem to govern what I am doing. So this is not really a life of freedom, but the life of slavery, which automatically means the life of suffering. Nobody really feels happy when one is put under bondage. Only as long as we don't realize that we are bound, we feel a sense of happiness about it. But the moment one realizes that we are bound, even a little child doesn't like that, wants to get free, because really freedom and happiness go together. So this true knowledge about oneself, removed from the fancies, we should have that feeling which is based on factually looking at our life, and which does not come very easy, friends, because more than 90% of our thoughts about ourselves are fanciful. And so it takes some practice to separate the fancies from the facts. It is the fancies, when you see them as fancies, it is not that bad. But when fancies get mixed up with the facts, when fancies are seen as facts, then it becomes really a big problem. So therefore, this true knowledge that how wretched our condition is, like Bhagavad Gita and many Upanishads mention, that what is this janma mritya jara vyadhi, this is there, as Buddha also said, you have to be born. It is a painful thing to be in that little space in the stomach, you know, in which you are constrained and then have no freedom at all. So it is, and then you are born again, all dependency. You can't. I remember later on people sing the glories of the childhood, that how happy we used to be, and how free and no responsibilities, and we could dance and sing and play, and that's it. But as remember, you know, during your childhood, did you feel like that? You are exceptional, agree, teacher, that it is you did, but probably you are not remembering your childhood. It is probably the fancies of your childhood that you are remembering. Okay, anyway, so, but in childhood, at least if you see the children, they want to grow out quickly of this terrible situation. Means they have to be dependent on the elderly, other people in the house. They have to do everything that the parents tell. They cannot go anywhere unless parents take them. Oh, what a difficult situation. So it is therefore, at that age, they want to grow up. And it is, they cannot do this, they cannot do this. And if they question, the parents tell them, oh, that is when you grow up, you can do it, you see, not now, when you grow up, you know. So it is, they are looking for that, you know, when they grow up. In fact, one child asked what it is that was looking in the mirror every 15 minutes to see how much he has grown up, how still to grow up to become, you know, as big as his dad. So it is, because that is how the situation is. And since childhood, then one grows, but the same struggle, bondage, we keep on running after the various things, that struggle and the pains. Health is good one day, not good on another day, and the day, it is like that. We keep on moving, but we still keep on fancying about our greatness, how good I am, how big I am. It is, Vedanta says, it is confusion, you know. Your true nature is great, you are divine. So what can be greater than you from that angle? You are the greatest. But in ignorance, your physical abilities or your physical structure is being mistakenly seen as divine. So it is a confusion that is happening. As body and mind, you are nothing. You are just in the hands of nature, and you are buffeted, you are kicked around by the fancies of the nature, no freedom at all. So to see that, that brings one kind of humility, one sense of, you know, how little I am. I speak of changing the whole world, as if the whole world is so small and dependent on my whims. Again my whims change. My own ideas about what is good for the world changes all the time. And then I still feel I will change the world. Who are you to change the world? Popular imagery is given, you know, that look, it is, there is this universe, there, so many galaxies everywhere, all around, in which this our galaxy, Milky Way, is a small part, very tiny thing. And then, in that, our solar system is a tiny speck. Then in that, you know, the earth, you can imagine how small it is. On that earth is this United States. And then in that United States, smallest state, Rhode Island, imagine. In that this Providence, and in that this Vedanta society, and then there that Yogatmananda says, you know, not visible at all, I will change the world. Does it make sense? Not at all. But yet I feel like that. So, the meekness, let us feel this. That how little I am, that is the one way of acquiring meekness, to reduce one's ego, because the ego is the biggest obstacle. So this is one way of looking at us and feel humble, which this kind of meekness, although imperfect, needs to be cultivated. And the other meekness is the surrender in God's grace, that it is God who does everything. I am tool in the hands of God, like Sri Ramakrishna always used to say that, oh mother, that is, he was referring to Divine Mother, mother, you are the operator, I am tool in your hand. So I have, as you do, so I go. It is a popular Bengali song that he used to sing, which has this meaning. And his life was like that, that a perfect surrender in the grace of God. That as God does, so it will happen. If somebody would come and ask him, well, please, you have to do this. Say, I don't know if mother wishes that will happen. It is, he had no I, separate I from God. It is, so that is the perfect meekness. And there is, when it is spoken of, many of us feel, this is a first reaction that one feels, that it is not possible for ordinary human beings to attain that kind of merging with the grace of God. It is, after all, we have to feel our separateness. It is that merging with the will of the God, probably it is not possible. It is, actually, we have to tell ourselves that it is possible. If my true nature is God, then merging with God is nothing more than a statement of reality, statement of truth. I am. So why should it be impossible? It should be considered possible. And it is this self-confidence that is very much needed by a spiritual aspirant. This confidence that, yes, I can do it. If there is no confidence, then we will not even take a step towards it. That is why I am very much reminded by that great statement of Swami Vivekananda that if you don't believe in God, then that is not being atheist. If you don't believe in yourself, that is being atheist. First have faith in yourself, then will come the faith in God. Otherwise, even saying that I believe in God is meaningless. I say I believe in God, but I have no faith in myself. Then what is the value of those words? So therefore it is important to know that it is possible, I can do it. Let us have faith in oneself. Faith in oneself is the secret of success in every field, including this spiritual, attaining to this spiritual wisdom. So it is very important to feel that confidence. Yes, I can do it. It is possible. If somebody has done it, then I also can do it. I am also as a person like you. If you could do it, why can I not do it? It is that feeling of self-confidence. It's very necessary. In Narada's aphorisms on devotion, very beautiful aphorisms, it's a great science that has been developed in those Sanskrit small, these words, I mean small sentences, they are not even full sentences, which very abbreviated way of presentation, and then but great truths are told in very few words. That is the nature of these that kind of literature, aphorisms. In Sanskrit it is called sutra. So Narada Bhakti Sutra. So this sutra, one of the sutras is, it comes after describing the nature of the devotee. A true devotee, how that true devotee's life will be. And he mentions tadarpita akhila acharata tat vismarane paramavyakulata. That the whole thing is full of God consciousness. It is complete surrender of a separate ego. So everything is surrendered in the will of God, no separate will. So tadarpita akhila acharataha, and that gets reflected in every action. It is every action is permeated with this awareness of surrender to God. And even for a slightest moment, there is an arousal of I, a separate I. It is felt so painful. Tad vismarane paramam vyakulata. That it is becomes so agonizing, that separateness from God, and that agony. And then next aphorism he says, asti evam evam, because after hearing this aphorism there will be a doubt, can such people really exist? It sounds very nice, but is there such a possibility? Has anybody ever achieved that? In one place where I often go to give discourses, and one gentleman always comes, very nice gentleman. And one question he has been asking all these years, although the tone of the questions has changed, that it is, the words have remained the same, the tone has changed, and you know the tone really contains the meaning, the connotation, more than the words. So his question was, used to be and same is, that Swami, it is all wonderful. Has anybody actually seen God? Give me one example, one living example. I don't want dead people. Give me one living example. I don't want two. Just one. And then I told, well, there are many, not just one. But the question is, do you have a criterion by which you will be able to identify? If I say, yes, I am seeing God, whether, do you have the tool to test it, that whether I have seen God or I have not seen God? Do you have that tool? Otherwise, again the same question, you believe me, that's all, or you don't believe me. So, first you have to develop the tool by which you will be able to see that it is like somebody would say that, well, there is God particle that discovered by scientists, God particle. It was predicted long back by Bose Einstein's, and then the verification came through that CERN, that big that telescope. So it is now, if somebody says that, can you show me? Well, you have to, you know, get equipped for that, get trained for that, to go through all those experiments. Can you show to a person who is illiterate how to do that? I had told that wonderful incident. One of our Swamis, he used to be academically very brilliant before becoming a Swami. That was in Kolkata, and his classmate, he later on became a very world-renowned scientist, a great physicist. His name was Meghnad Saha. Meghnad Saha is a very accomplished, was an accomplished scientist, and Meghnad Saha then goes to see his old friend in one of our ashramas, one of our centers in Kolkata. That center is still there. It is known as Kolkata Students Home. So, and it had a lot of land, some agriculture goes on, and there are many Swamis, many students live there. So he went and started having a chat with this Swami, and this he said to Swami, oh, you in our school, I remember you were as brilliant as I was, in fact a little better than me. You also, had you perceived, had you persevered with your studies, you would have become a big scientist like me, but you wasted all that. Anyway, whatever that may be, please explain me all this about Brahman and Atman and the truth of Vedanta. Tell me all that quickly. Quickly means he's a big figure, you know, so he had very little time. And tell me quickly in a nutshell, what is it all about? This Swami thought of making a little fun, but through fun to explain to him that it is not as simple as you think. So he called somebody who was working in the farm there, an illiterate person. Hey, come here! And as he approached, came here, he told Meghnad, tell your astrophysics to him, explain it in a minute. Well, how can I explain it to him? it is, he is an illiterate person, and to tell him all about astrophysics like that, how is it possible? I cannot. Same thing, just as he is illiterate in your field, you are illiterate in this field. You have to, you know, increase your wisdom in this, you have to practice. So that is how, you know, it is not just, have you seen, well, yes and no. Do you have a criterion to judge by? No. So therefore, gradually that man's, this, the question still comes, but he immediately answers, oh yes, I know that first I will have to develop the tools. First I will have to do some spiritual practice, then only I will be able to understand. I understand that now. So it is. But he does not refrain from asking the question, that is there somebody who has seen it? Okay, I know. Yeah, I have to develop myself to know that. So it is, Narada says, yes, asti evam evam, there are great examples who have achieved this. What it means is that you also can achieve it. There is that beautiful book, Imitation of Christ. Many of you might have read it. It is, actually I'll be giving a retreat on that book on 14th of August at in Connecticut. So, it was one of the two books Swami Vivekananda in his journey now could not carry. He was mostly going all around on foot, so had only two books with him. One was Bhagavad Gita and other was Imitation of Christ. So it is, and what is this Imitation of Christ? If you walk in the footsteps of somebody, suppose Jesus is walking ahead of you, and you are just stepping, following the footsteps of Jesus, will you not reach where Jesus has reached? It is, that is the conclusion. Why do you think you will not, if Jesus could do it, why can you not do it? Somehow it is preached that no, that is not for ordinary people to do that. Vedanta does not entertain such thing. Everybody, each soul is potentially divine. And no, Jesus was the only Son of God, and whose children are we? The greatness of Jesus is that he knew that he is child of God. We don't know that. We ascribe our parenthood to this man and that woman and so forth. That is why we are not children of God. That's the ignorance that is keeping us away from realizing this great truth, that we also are same like Jesus, the children of divine. So, asti evam evam, there are such who realize this truth and thereby attain to freedom. So, here he says, trust steadfastly that there is such a perfect humility as I speak of, and that it may be achieved through grace in this life. In this life, since we speak of, you know, reincarnation and all that, many of the devotees come and tell me that, Swami, I don't think I will be able to get liberation in this life. I ask, why do you think like that? Give me one reason that you will not be able to realize it in this life. Tell me one reason. That why should you think like that? And if you cannot, you feel you cannot realize in this life, tell me at least one reason that how you will attain it in some next life. It is not that you cannot realize in this life. Everybody can realize if one takes to the right course. follows the right path, each of us can realize this God. No, in the past I have done all this. Well, that is past. That don't think about it. It is a very important statement that comes in Bhagavad Gita, that Lord says that a person may be sinning whole life, abhijet sudhuracharo, might have committed so many evil things in life, but becomes a devotee. Then what happens? Then that person should not be considered as a sinner anymore. There is not a person that is sinner and a person that is divine. It is what you are filled with, that is the question. In a glass, if you pour poison, then because of the poison in the glass, it gets called as the glass of poison. And now you wash the glass, throw the poison, and nicely wash it, put it in the dishwasher and all that, take out, and then you fill it with orange juice. Will you still call it glass of poison? No, then it is glass of orange juice. It is no more glass of poison. So if a person, there is a lot of sinful thoughts, evil thoughts, that is why that person is called evil. Empty it and fill with devotion. Now that becomes a saint. A saint is that. It is so simple really. That you become saint by emptying those sinful thoughts and filling with saintly thoughts. It is, therefore it is possible. Let us remember that it is possible. There are such exemplary souls, Narada mentions. And what happens here, that he advocates, that the author of this book, that look, therefore, too much harping on sin should not be thought of. Remembering, yes, I am humble means it is the I am powerless in the face of all these nature. I am bound. My condition is wretched in that sense. To know that, it is good. But meditating on that is bad. Meditate on God. That reliance should be not on my wretchedness, but reliance must be on the grace of God. That is, meditate on God. Otherwise, it is, let me quote from the book. And here he alludes, because the discussion began actually a few chapters back, that when he was telling about the active life and contemplative life, and he gave the example from New Testament, that is that of Martha and Mary. Martha and Mary, the two sisters, and they were both devoted to Jesus, and as Jesus came to their home, they both were so overjoyed. Jesus came with many, and so of the two sisters, Martha, she started working to take care of all these, to show the best hospitality possible, started cooking, making other arrangements to entertain the guests. And Mary, she just sat at the feet of Jesus. After a while, Martha felt that what is this, that I am doing all this work. Should she not get up and render a helping hand? So much of work needs to be done. And look, she is just sitting at the feet of Jesus, and she complained to Jesus about that. And Jesus said, Martha, Martha, you are different, she is different. You have many things to do. there are people like us, we have many things to do. Like whenever the question comes that one must realize God in this life, that is what the life is for. But then immediately this Sneha will say, I have to do this too, I have to do that, I must take care of that, all that it is. First, I have to take care of all these things, many things to do, keeps us continuously busy. And that joke that I had told a few classes back, that the minister asked the congregation, surely you want to go to heaven, is it not? How many of you want to go to heaven? And he expected all hands will be raised. No hand was raised. So he was, hey, you don't want to go to heaven. Well, eventually, yes, we thought that you are asking right now. Right now, I have after this sermon, which you are anyway making it too long, after that, I will go to Starbucks and then after all this is done, then heaven. So it is, that is the active, that too many things to take care of. But those who see that God alone is reality, that is the goal of life. Sri Ramakrishna again and again says this thing, again and again, really that is a repetition that you read in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. But that repetition has a great meaning. That God realization is the goal of human life. We don't have 10 goals or 100 goals, and we have this one goal. And when one understands this, then what happens? The direction of life changes. Now you are not concerned about 100. It is that I think, yes, Prashant, at New Jersey, that question had come a few times. Last Sunday we had, Saturday and Sunday we had a retreat in New Jersey. So many asked this question that, but there are so many things that are to be done. The mind gets scattered. And so how can we meditate, how to concentrate? It is... The problem is here, that on the circumference of a circle, how many points are there? Innumerable, you say. Infinitely many. And how many centers are there? Just one. That center is the goal. We should understand that. But we go to catch all the points on the circumference. I have to do this, I have to find a right spouse, I have to find right job, I have to get lot of money, I want to see how I can hit a big jackpot, and so many things, you see. Then I want to do this and that. It was a question asked by one college-going girl there, that what should I be doing? That it is, I want to do this, I want to do that, and then the life is all finished and still nothing is done. Because it is the points on the circumference are infinite. How many can you reach? But if you change the direction and go to the center, now you can concentrate. Otherwise, I have to take care of my spouse. That takes long time. I have to take care of my job. It takes long time. I have to take care of my kids. It takes away all the energy. And so many things, and I like to listen to music. I need to go there, that takes time. I am so much interested in, you know, different movies, so I have, that takes time. And then I am interested in politics also, so I have to, you know, that also absorbs my energy. And so where is time left for now concentrating on God? Absolutely no time. That is why the most important thing is disregarded. It is not paid attention to. And the reason then it is like this, what happens is all those other things also lose their importance. There is the founder of this Vedanta society here, Swami Akhilananda. He has a beautiful lecture about, you know, having a loving relationship with everybody around in our family and in the community. And he beautifully has showed that if you can love God, then you will see you will be able to love others. If you independently try to love others, you will feel you cannot love even a single person. Because all are connected to God. If you are at the center, then you actually are connected to all points on the circumference, being the center for the whole. But otherwise, you are not connected to anything. And so, that is why Jesus says that it is, ye first seek the kingdom of heaven, and everything else shall be added unto you. It is, but we do differently. We think that let me first run after everything and then we'll think about the kingdom of heaven. So we miss both in that sense. Everything cannot be accomplished here. And in the effort to accomplish everything, we do not accomplish this essential thing, realization of God. Going to the kingdom of heaven. So that is why it is told, let the meditation be shifted on this reliance of love. So it is, so in this story of Martha and Mary, it is told about that how was Mary's this awareness there, that she knew well and felt strongly in herself with a sad steadfastness that she was a wretch more foul than any other, and that her sins had made a division between her and her God whom she loved so much. So that much of the imperfect meekness was there. But then more than that it is described. But what followed? Did she therefore come down from the height of desire into the depths of her sinful life and search in the foul sinking fen and dunghill of her sins, searching them one by one with all their circumstances, sorrowing and weeping over each one? That is not what she did. That is what happens to many, and that becomes a cause for a lot of depression. That, oh, I did this thing wrong, you know. It was so bad. I don't know how I did it. And the thought goes again and again on that. Somehow you control that. That thing happened in my life, you see. I was so stupid. I don't know, I did such bad thing then. Now I see it was so bad. I can't bring myself out of that. I keep on, you know, thinking about that. The person starts, you know, what is a psychological problem of building guilt. That he always feeling guilty and therefore not comfortable in dealing with oneself and others because of that feeling of guilt. guilt, feeling of guilt really kills all this self-confidence. It is therefore very, very important that, yes, I committed some mistakes, I didn't know anything better. Well, it happened. I'm sorry for that. But that's it. And we should not give a second thought to it. It's enough, is enough. Swami Vivekananda says that do not call yourself sinners. Call yourself the children of divinity. I am a child of God. It is very important to emphasize that, and therefore this book continues. No, she certainly did not do this, and why not? Because God in His grace had permitted her to know within her soul that she could never achieve it in that way. By thinking about the guilt, thinking about the sin, had she done that, she would more likely have developed in herself the ability to sin often than to have secured by that work the clear forgiveness for her sins. And this is what happens. If you think about sins, I did this and I did that. See what is unconsciously happening. And I'm meditating on those things. And what I meditate on becomes stronger in me. And so, therefore, that kind of repentance is sure to be followed by repetition. We don't think that, well, I was repenting. Well, the repenting means you were thinking of it. You were meditating on it. And so it was growing in you. And so, although you didn't want to repeat it, it forced you to repeat it. So that is the, that as wrong something that a person can do to think about the bad things that I did. Well, in ignorance everybody would do bad things. Forget it. Now try to do good things. So it is like that. You don't, you know, if a say a plate is not clean. So do you keep on just meditating how unclean it is? Oh, there is all this food stuff sticking here, there, and it looks so dirty. And no, you just clean it, that's it. And then immediately somebody else will find it very clean to eat food from, that's it. So that is the goal. That is the way, both. That is what Jesus says, I am the goal, I am the way. That feel, that grace. So not too much thought about one's wretchedness. So, then, that is, a true contemplative does not desire to mix in active life. He does not care what is done or spoken to him. This is another thing that needs to be practiced. If I feel, yes, I am devotee, first thing I start feeling is I am special. Nobody should criticize me. And if somebody criticizes me, I immediately start refuting and protecting myself. In fact, I'm pouncing and criticizing that person more than that person criticized me. So it is something that one should not do. Again, I remember that Narada's aphorism here, Vado Navalambyaha. A devotee does not get into arguments with others because, well, he sees that that person's, according to that person's understanding, that person is doing. If that person criticizes me, well, let him, what does it matter? Does not go to defend. And here he mentions when, again, same example, Martha and Mary. When Martha was complaining. Mary did not go and start, no, I am right, who are you to tell me? And Jesus, don't listen to her, my sister, she is stupid. And no, she did not, Martha kept quiet, did not bother about it. She was so absorbed by the presence of Jesus. So that is how people will criticize, you see, why you should worry about it. They didn't know any better. So a person of this contemplative type who is thinking of God does not indulge in criticizing others, or even let me bring everybody on my path. Not necessary. I used to, think when I read some Vedanta books and saw that, yes, it used to be in my college days. And so I was so much fired that that is the right thing. Now, if that is the right thing, what right thing should I do? I should practice it. But the impulse was, let me go and tell it to everybody. Let me tell all my colleagues and friends that all they are doing is wrong. And I met one Swami and I told him that this is correct, isn't it? Yes. And then, so I am going to now tell it to everybody. All my friends, I have so many friends, but they don't understand this thing. In fact, they criticize me for this. I am going to argue with them. And he smiled at me and said, well, try, but know that it doesn't work like that. It is, you will get, your mind will get ruffled, that's all. More agitated, more angry. And that was happening, that's all. I went to one friend, hey, see, this is not the right thing that you are doing, it is not correct. And it as it were, as if I was speaking to a wall. See, look, read this book, how nicely it is told there. And his question to me was something that it was unexpected to me. He said, who told you, who is the fool who told you to read those books? Don't read those books and then you will not have this problem. Oh wow, what a nice, he was thinking I am having a problem. And probably he was right. So it is. And why you got this problem? You read that Vivekananda and that other, those spiritual Chinmayananda and Vivekananda, and so got your head spoiled by that. And don't read those books. This is a nice, this thing, humor movie. We shall go and watch it. That will bring. So he wouldn't understand. That would agitate me more. So the thing is, we a devotee need not bother others. That Krishna also tells Arjuna that there are different levels of people. It needs all types to make this world. So you don't have to go and tell others that, no, you must become like this. No, don't criticize them. Even if others are condemning you, you don't have to retort back. It is because that is not your goal. Your goal is to hold on to God. So do not worry about others criticizing you or any such thing. And because then our mind goes in other direction. That is why, how is Mary? Mary immerses herself in love. No remembrance of ordinary name and form. And this is the philosophical presentation of it. That all other works and people, and I have to do this and this, I have to take care of this. What is it all? It is concerning the name and form. And Jesus, this love of God is rising beyond name and form to the essence. And that is how we have a mixed, confusing picture of reality. It is told in Vedanta books that this world has five constituents: existence, knowledge, bliss, name and form. The first three are from reality, other two are from ignorance. Where are we different, tell me? Name and form, that's it. We are all heaps of the same matter, is it not? As body goes, whatever atoms or molecules, whatever fundamental particles, they go on discovering new every now and then. So whatever, but this is one heap of the same particles, this is another heap, that is another heap. It is, one heap gets called Yogatma and the other gets called Karin, another gets called Paul and so forth, you see. But it is, what is these Yogatmananda, Karin and Paul and all that? They are names and forms. And these names and forms, how are they? They are changing, shifting. They do not have any inherent substantiality to them. And so, when you take out that name and form, then all the differences go away. All that a person engaged in the so-called worldly activities, running after many things, that goes away. It is because it is all dependent on name and form. Short of name and form, it is all one. So this is how the love remembers one. That is the biggest characteristic of love. Love unifies, brings things to one. And the other, that remembrance of ordinary name and form, that harps on multiplicity. That distracts the mind more and more. So this is how, therefore, a true contemplative does not care about what is done and spoken about him, and does not defend himself before his critics. This is an important, because what is there, let people say, and is not bothered about that. He says, the author says, it seems to me, therefore, that they must always be excused. Excusing those who criticize you for following this path, they have to be excused. Let us not worry about it. They have to be excused. The word excuse is, in English language, gets used in so many ways, you know. I say to somebody something that person doesn't like or doesn't agree, then the way to retort back is, excuse me! So that is another one way of saying, excuse me. If I am standing and somebody wants to pass around me, he says, excuse me, and so on, goes away. So it is, excusing somebody has many different connotations. This excuse is that somebody is criticizing you, condemning you, maybe in the vilest language. Do not take note of it. There is a saying, a Hindi couplet by Kabir, that actually Swami Vivekananda also mentioned to Sri Ramakrishna, that I will be like that. Hathi chala bazaar mein, kutta bhonk hazaar. Actually, I don't know, in the United States that kind of scene is difficult to imagine these days. But I have seen such a thing. in India so many times. An elephant is walking on the market street, and all the street dogs, they start barking at that elephant. Now the elephant knows well what are they going to do to me. Let them bark, and never pays slightest attention to them, and keeps on going on its path. So sadhana ko durbhav nahi chahe ninday sab sansar. So the one who is a saintly person does not take an offense when people criticize him. So that is how the attitude should be. The active types therefore should not be criticized by contemplative types. They should be respected, for they too are lovers of God as they understand. Yes, as they understand, everybody is being taken care of by God. It doesn't devolve upon me to teach everybody. Well, there is the God who teaches them. That there is that anecdote about this Martin Luther, who used to get sometimes upset that I tell people all these things about being good and all that, nobody listens, and he used to feel somewhat upset and depressed. And his wife used to explain to him, you should not worry too much about it. Let us spend our life prayerfully. Let us do our prayers. Why? But he, being a preacher and all, he would go and tell, and nobody listens, so would come upset. So once when he came back home, he saw his wife putting on a mourning dress. She had put on a mourning dress. Who passed away? Who died? One of her very close relatives, you know, died away. Is it? Who? God died. God died? How can God die? What are you talking about? God died. It seems so, otherwise why you have to take all the burden on your head, you see? If you have faith in God, and then you want to go to, you know, let me change this, let me convert this fellow, let me bring this person on the right path and so forth. You follow the right path, that's all. At least you will make one person follow the right path. One person was arguing with me about it, that what is the use if I just realize God? What good will it do to the world? If I realize God, isn't it selfish? Then I said, no, it is not selfish. The first thing, at least one potential troublemaker is eliminated, isn't it so? So at least that good has been done. So, and that is what, if you become peaceful, you will scatter peace around you. So that is how this is explained. We will continue the study of this book by the grace of God and next Tuesday too. There are three more classes during this summer. And I don't think we'll be finishing the book, but let us see whatever we can study. It's fine, you know. The idea is not to finish the candy, but to taste it as long as it tastes good. So, any questions? Oh, Charles, okay.
You seem to say it's very simple to take away the simple thoughts and put in the saintly thoughts and have confidence that you'll realize God in this lifetime. But that assumes that we have control over all this. And from my experience, I don't feel I have that control.
Well, just as you have the control of asking this question, it is true, you know, that to the extent that we feel to that extent we have a control. It is beyond that we don't have control. Absolutely speaking, we don't have control on anything. But in the relative sphere of ignorance, we have that sense of ego, and therefore we have the choice, should I do this or should I not do this? It is, that is the kind of control that is meant there. That yes, it is, you have some control, whether to come here or not to come here, it is, whether you ask me, should I take vacation on this day, or whether I should go to Virginia to see my brother. So you have a control, you know, it is.
But not of my own mind, though. I have control over my body. I can go to a certain place or not go.
To understand this, that I don't have control on my mind, also is a sign of a little control.
Mm-hmm.
You are able to see your mind separate from you.
Mm-hmm.
So then something that is separate from you, you can learn to control it. So that is, you have control, but the more you identify with God, the more control you will have.
Mm-hmm.
That is the way.
Mm-hmm. Even in the Bible it says, that which I would do, I don't do, and that which I wouldn't do, I do.
Well, that is the present state of affairs would be, but don't harp on it, you see. Mm-hmm. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Ramakrishna.